man, can you believe that Christmas is a week away? Doesn't feel like it, but it is, which means New Year's is right around the corner as well. Tonight was the Holiday Bash episode of Dynamite. This is the three-hour block that they have been promoting now for a few weeks. You know how I love these three-hour shows. But they were in Manchester, England, earlier today, technically. And they had 10,000-plus in the building there. Not something you see every week for Dynamite. And on this show, it was really all about one thing. Now, if you are super into the Continental Classic, we got lots of good wrestling matches tonight. Yeah, good wrestling matches up and down the card. If you're not into the Continental Classic, like I've been saying, this is probably one of your least favorite periods in AEW because almost everything revolves around this tournament for the entire month. However, tonight, we have the return of someone very important in AEW, the former AEW World Champion, the longest reigning AEW World Champion of all time, MJF, who has been missing now for quite some time. And he is a welcome addition to this show. He has been missed, and he is back. Not only is he back, he is back to blow up the World's End main event. There was a major change tonight that was made to that pay-per-view main event, which is coming up on December 27th. And I will talk about that. Very happy to see MJF back on my TV. Outside of that, like I said, we got a bunch of good wrestling matches and not really a whole lot else to speak of. I saw somebody in the chat before make a comment that it was an episode that happened. It was. There were more people there than usual, but it was very much an episode that happened. We did get a lot of good wrestling, though. So we will talk about the standings and whatnot, where things stand as far as the Continental Classic is concerned. I am the Solemn Monster. This is your Dynamite / Collision Holiday Bash review here for Wednesday, December 17th, 2025. Thank you for joining me here on a Wednesday night, our final live stream of the week. I will not be here on Friday night. I will be in Jamaica, Queens, closing out the year at the House of Glory show where we have the Hardys. Everybody always goes nuts for the Hardys when they show up. Everybody's coming and doing the Jeff Hardy dance. Everybody's doing it. That's where I'll be on Friday, so let's have a good one tonight. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open. I know a whole bunch of them came in earlier tonight before I went live, so we will go through all of that. And thank you for all the positive feedback as well. We had a hell of an episode last night of Tuesday Night Titans, especially talking about the John Cena finale on Saturday night's main event. A lot of great feedback. People seem to enjoy it. I thought it was a good discussion / debate. So you can go check that out over on JD's channel if you missed it. But I just wanted to say thank you for that. So let's get into this Dynamite show here and not waste any more time. You know, technically they went over 3 hours. The show did not end at 11 o'clock. The Tag Team Championship match was still going on after 11 p.m. That should never, ever happen. There was a tag team title match on this show. Did you honestly think the tag team titles were going to change hands? Neither did I. There was no reason for this show to go beyond 11 o'clock. But they wasted no time in kicking things off. As soon as they came on the air tonight, Jon Moxley and Roderick Strong, they were already in the ring for a Blue League match in the Continental Classic. Now, I mentioned before, big building tonight for them to be running Dynamite, and they had legitimately over 10,000 people, between 10 and 11,000 people in that venue here. First time in ages that I can remember Dynamite having an audience that big. And so you would think they would come on the air tonight and they would make a big deal about this. They got 3 hours, you know, they don't have to rush into anything. You got 3 hours here, come on the air, show the crowd. No, none of that. Literally, Jon Moxley and Roderick Strong are in the ring, ding, 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 and we're off to the races. And I'm like, dude, like, you don't get to run big venues like this very often for Dynamite. It's very impressive that you were able to pack it in the way that you did. It wasn't like the entire building was not legitimately sold out, but they had a great crowd. Why not take the time to just show the crowd, pan the crowd, do more of a proper intro this week so that you can adequately showcase how many people are there and how energetic and lively they are. I thought that was a missed opportunity to just fucking dive right into the action. If it was any other week, I would say, okay, that's a different way to open the show. This was not the week to do that. You got to show this off. You got to gloat a little bit. Because as soon as you go back to the States, you're not going to be able to do that. So I was puzzled by why they felt this week of all weeks they had to just rush right into the show and not fully acknowledge where they were. But this was a must-win here for these two. That's how they were couching this whole thing. Neither of these men have been terribly impressive here in this tournament so far. John Moxley has had better showings in the past, I think it's safe to say. So they brawled into the crowd early. Moxley was sent back into the ring. Roddy, though, took too long to follow up. That gave Moxley a chance to hit a tope, which left both men down heading into a break. Moxley, he tried a Gotch-style pile driver. Strong, though, backdropped out of it. Moxley landed hard on the outside. Back inside, Roddy dropped him with an angle slam. Moxley rolled out of a stronghold to the floor. Strong, though, again went out after him and set up the ring steps. And he picks up Moxley, and he drops him down on the flat part of the steps, back first. And actually, the way Moxley planted his elbow, looked like his elbow got the brunt of that blow when he landed on the stairs. Back inside, Roddy hit a superplex, got a near fall out of that. So we got a slugfest here between these two men. Roddy spun out of a death rider into a tiger driver before looking for the stronghold. Moxley escaped. Both men went up where Strong tried to throw a knee. Moxley hit a perfect leaping cutter for a two count. So he quickly plants him with a pile driver. That didn't work. So Moxley, at this point, he scrambles for a rear naked choke and forces Roddy to roll to the ropes. Strong threw a desperation knee for a near fall. And the crowd was biting on some of these near falls here near the end. And he got the stronghold, and they were yelling for Moxley to tap because in the last few months, they have established that Moxley has tapped out before. It is possible now that he might actually tap out. See, that's the importance of setting up all of those spots and the stuff with Kyle O'Reilly and all the teases that he's going to tap out. And, you know, what happened in Blood and Guts and him tapping out to Darby at Wrestle Dream. You know, that's the benefit in it, that when you have this guy in a situation like this, some fans anyway, can actually buy into the possibility that, hey, this guy might actually tap out. So they had the fans believing in that. Moxley spun out. He sent Roddy outside. Strong quickly returned to the ring, only to get spiked with a paradigm shift. But there was a little bit of a delay in going for the cover that allowed Roddy to kick out. Moxley, though, followed up with a proper death rider, and he won the match and the points. And that means that Roderick Strong, ladies and gentlemen, has been mathematically eliminated from the Continental Classic. And really, let's be honest, as soon as he was announced for this tournament, he was mathematically eliminated. And don't tell me I'm wrong, because you know I'm right. So they told the story of both men being desperate for the points here. And the fans were, like I said, they were biting on some of the near falls. So it was a good opener. I just wish they would have taken the time to really just showcase where they were. Honestly, it felt like another Dynamite. That's the problem. Like, you really need to lean into where you are. You know, you're in a unique setting. You're overseas. AEW has a lot of fans overseas. You know, now if they were based overseas, you know, that would probably peter out. The reason I think they're so popular over there in part is because they don't run that many shows. So when they go, people are like, oh, AEW is coming to town. We got to go. So it's still a very big market for them. But I just think that was a mistake, you know, not leaning even more than they did into the fact that, hey, we have all these people here. We're packed in Manchester. And I don't know. This just felt like another opening to any Dynamite that you would see on any given week. So Eddie Kingston was backstage. Quick promo here from him. Of course, he lost to Samoa Joe last week at Winter Is Coming. Winter has come. Winter has come and gone. Actually, no, that's not true. It's been cold as fuck here in New York. And yet at the end of the week, it's going to be almost 60 degrees. 60 and rain. And then the next day, it'll probably drop down to like 30. Go figure. But Eddie said that you either win or you learn. You never lose. Last week, he tapped out to the world champion. Yeah, but he learned from it. Says everyone else he faces going forward, they're going to see what he's learned. He goes, one loss doesn't mean anything to him, and he'll move forward. maybe on Collision. Then we had the Million Dollar Trios match. Oh, yeah. Only this time. And if you're thinking to yourself, again? Yes, again. For the same money, by the way, that they competed for last time. It's the same money that was in the bag that they competed for at Full Gear. But this time, the difference is that Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, now they're reunited. So you had the Elite all together on the same side. And on the opposing side, you had the Don Callis family, which was Kazuchika Okada, Konosuke Takeshita, and Hechicero. Yosuke Hechicero. Typically the fall guy in these matches. Don Callis came out. He gave his over-the-top introduction for Takeshita and then for Hechicero. They made their way to the ring. Okada got his own entrance because he's the superstar here. So the Elite crew, they did the Terminator bit. Terminator dive. Early on here in this match, then they hit stereo suicide dives. Matt tried to return to the ring. Okada, though, held his legs. That allowed Hechicero to grab Matt Jackson and hit a hammerlock into a backbreaker. Matt got isolated before he tagged in his brother, and he got the better of all three heels, including a nice simultaneous takedown of Okada and Takeshita. Nick followed up by jumping off the apron and taking Hechicero down with a head scissors. A little while later, Nick avoided Hechicero's hammerlock backbreaker. He hit him with a destroyer. Okada tagged in. He called for Omega, who also tagged in. And the two of them traded punches and forearms in the middle of the ring. Now, there was a spot in here where Okada tagged in. He called for Hechicero to come take part in a double team maneuver. Takeshita, though, opted to do it instead, which displeased Okada. So Takeshita shoved Okada out of the way so that he and Hechicero could hit a double suplex on Omega, and Okada looked very annoyed about this. Later on, Takeshita signaled for a power drive knee late in the match. Okada, though, stole it. He tried for a rainmaker. Takeshita and Okada, they argued. Hechicero now is standing in between them. He is trying to play peacemaker. He is trying to keep the peace between these two men, not having a lot of luck. Takeshita sent Okada outside. Omega then comes in. He hits Snapdragon suplexes on Takeshita, Hechicero, and then Okada. And the Elite trio, they hit a kneeling Hechicero with a triple superkick. Omega hit Hechicero with a V-trigger and then held him up while the Bucks helped out with the assisted one-winged angel, and that led to the three count to not just win the match, but to win the $1 million. This should be like a game show. Where you win $1 million, sirens go off, confetti falls, balloons. No, they just won the match. It's just like any other match. Nothing means anything. I mean, if you're going to put $1 million on the line, look, I know that the Elite are probably multimillionaires. All the money that they've been paid by Tony Khan over all these years. But still, it's $1 million that you put on the line in this match. You could at least make it feel like it's going to actually have an impact on their lives, as it would everybody watching the television show. So when the match was over, Callis, he's holding on to the bag of money. And Takeshita and Okada, they attack the Bucks and Omega. We got a raging fire and a rainmaker that connected on the Bucks. And Okada then shoves Takeshita. And Takeshita returns the shove. Callis is on the apron now. He is jumping up and down. He is scrambling, trying to get them to just stop and behave themselves. Omega returns with a broom and chases them from the ring. The cleaner is back. I don't know that the crowd really picked up on that. The money was a non-factor in all of this, a complete and total non-factor. It is a stupid gimmick, and Tony needs to give it a rest. I mean, it's, you know, we joke about all the titles and all these things he loves to do and the money stuff. Like, enough. Especially when it comes to like $1 million. Like, it doesn't mean anything. It's such an arbitrary thing that they don't do anything to make the $1 million match feel any differently than the $400,000 tag team match. It's just stupid. It's stupid. It has no effect on anything. Please, for the love of God, put it on the shelf. I know he is overflowing with money. He just doesn't know what to do with it. Please, save your money. Please. I beg of you. Enough with the money. But I will say, anytime we get Omega and Okada in the ring together, I mean, you have my attention. They had that great match, obviously, in Texas at All In. So we got a little bit of Okada and Omega for the first time ever on Dynamite here tonight, and I'm here for it. And of course, in this match, and really the main reason why this match was even booked in the first place, was to further the conflict between Takeshita and Okada. And there really is nothing else at this point that they could possibly do with these two, outside of continuing to do angles like the one they did tonight. And at this point, we have seen it so many times, there's only one thing left to do. Get them in the finals of the Continental Classic. I will be stunned if the finals ends up being anything other than Okada and Takeshita. And if they do it, hopefully it's just match number one, and we get a second one somewhere along the way. But I just don't see how it could be anything else. And I only say that because would Tony Khan want to continue to tease it and drag it out just a little bit longer? I don't think so. I mean, you can't discount the possibility, but like, again, there's no AEW pay-per-views after World's End until Revolution. Revolution, I think, is March 15th. And if you're not going to do it at World's End, and again, I'm sure he will, but if you didn't do it at World's End, there's really no other appropriate place to do it, that first meeting, but on a pay-per-view. Can't have another 3 months of this stuff. Yeah, I mean, they have done a very, I think, admirable job of building up to this point where people now are hungry to want to see these two in the ring and just knock each other's blocks off. You got to give it to them. It's the only match that makes sense in the finals of this tournament. Now, you can debate the winner. Like, if he wanted to extend this out to two matches, three matches, does he want Okada to win the first one? Look, there is absolutely a chance that Okada wins that match. I would prefer it be, you know, Takeshita, but if the idea was that Okada goes on to win the entire thing, and then they extend it out to Revolution, Dynasty, you know, whatever, fine. Like, I'm okay with that. And then ultimately turning, with the goal of turning Takeshita full babyface and bouncing him out of the Callis family, like, that's fine. But I'm ready for the match. There's really not a whole lot left to do. It's very repetitious at this point. The pay-per-view is a week from Saturday, so we're not too far off. And yeah, it's like the one main story that they have been building now for months that I'm invested in. I'm fully into it, and I am genuinely excited for the payoff. I'm excited for the match. This really is the one. Now, after this, it was time for the contract signing for the AEW World Championship match coming up at World's End on December 27th. Now, it was seemingly going to be Samoa Joe defending the AEW World Championship against Hangman Adam Page. And then Swerve Strickland beat Josh Alexander on Collision last week and laid his claim to wanting a shot at the AEW World Championship. So this was going to be a contract signing for a triple threat match. And if there was any physicality between these men, we were told before this, that they would lose their spot in the match next Saturday. So that is how they got around the whole, like, how come they're all standing around in the ring together and not going after each other? No physicality. So Hangman was out first, then Swerve, and then the champion. Getting the final entrance, as he should. He came out with his fellow ops members. So Hobbs was out there. I don't know. Was Shibata out there? I don't know if Shibata was out there. Shibata doesn't say anything. Shibata just sort of, he just sort of fades into the background sometimes. I don't know that he was there, but Hobbs was there and Hook was there. I know that. So Joe had his world championship slung over one shoulder. His trios title slung over the other. Draped in gold is Samoa Joe. And he cut Tony Schiavone off right away. He said that he brought his boys with him because things are always very volatile when Hangman and Swerve are in the ring together. So he just wanted to make sure that everybody was safe and nobody was going to be triggered enough to do something stupid. Now, he said this with his arm around Hook as they were smiling at Hangman after what happened in the main event of Full Gear. So Joe signed the contract straight away, and he said that he hopes the two of them make it to World's End in one piece. Short and sweet from the AEW World Champion. Then it was Swerve's turn. And he said that he came back to AEW for the World Championship. And if the outcome was different at Full Gear, he would be coming after Hangman right now. But after all that they've been through, there's now a mutual respect there between them. And a mutual hatred there for Samoa Joe. Now, the last time we had a contract signing, he looked at Joe and he said, "You put me down badly, so badly, that I had to sign the contract in a pool of my own blood." And he paid Joe back by taking away his AEW World Championship, just like he's going to do at World's End. He's going to leave a boot print. He's going to stomp him and leave a boot print on Joe's face so bad it's going to be uglier than the face tattoo he had on his face in 2007. We do not need to refer back to Russo's creative when it comes to Samoa Joe. We can leave that in the past where it belongs. No need to dig up all the dead bodies from back then. So with that, Swerve signed the contract. And then it was Hangman's turn. And he wanted to remind both of them that here we are in December, but back in July, we were fighting together. We were not fighting against each other. We were fighting together to end the tyranny of the Death Riders. And Joe, it could just as easily have been you beating Jon Moxley to win the world title. And Swerve, if the two of them had figured things out before he fought Jon Moxley, it could have just as easily been Swerve in that match. But when they figured it out, it was left to him. And what did he do? He went in there and he became the AEW World Champion. And he knew that his world champion, one by one, each of them would find their way across the ring from him, and he would give them that opportunity. He gave it to Joe. He said he gave it to Joe at WrestleDream, and he failed. So instead of accepting that defeat, he turned to Shibata, and he turned to Hobbs, and he turned to Hook. Joe turned into what he fought against. He is worse than the Death Riders on their worst day. Now, let's not exaggerate, okay? Let's not get carried away here. Samoa Joe's as bad or worse than the Death Riders on their worst day. Okay, you lost me there, Hangman. Okay, you lost me there. I cannot endorse that statement. Joe has no self-respect. He has no dignity left. And in the twilight years of his career, he would hate for the legend of Samoa Joe to be remembered for the piece of shit that he is today. And they went nose to nose. As world champion, Hangman planned on defending that title against everybody who helped him. That includes Darby Allin. That includes Will Ospreay. And he knew that there would come a time when once again he would stand across the ring from you, Swerve. You said that you came back to AEW to challenge for the world championship. And if he was the champion, he would have expected nothing less from him. And if Swerve would have beaten him, he would have accepted that defeat and handed the title to him. But that is not the world that we live in. At World's End, this will be a three-way match, and he can't guarantee who's going to leave as the champion, but he can guarantee that it will not be Samoa Joe. He said, Joe has messed up worse than he knows in making an enemy out of the two of them, and with that, Hangman signed the contract to make the match official. Tony Schiavone said, there it is. Your three-way match for the AEW World Championship at World's End. Until the lights went out. The lights went out, and we hear MJF's music. And he got a huge reaction, walking out for the first time in many months. I don't even remember the last time we saw him on TV. I don't remember what episode of Dynamite it was or what pay-per-view it might have been, but it's been a while. He's been filming, he's been doing stuff, he's been taking some time for himself, and now MJF is finally back on TV. And the fans sang his song or hummed his song, it has no fucking words, as he came down to the ring. So he gets into the ring, and he was showered in MJF chants. He's also got new hair, I should point that out. His hair looked very different. He has nicer hair and more hair on his head now than he did when he debuted in this company in 2019. So maybe that's also, you know, he was doing a lot of different things when he was away. But he looked rested, he looked well, and he looked ready to go here. He summoned Smart Mark Sterling over. He was outside. He summoned him over, and he handed him a clipboard with a contract on it, and he signed it before handing it over to Tony Schiavone. And Schiavone said, well, MJF just signed his guaranteed contract for a shot at the AEW World Championship that he won in the Casino Gauntlet many months ago. But he cashed. Now, again, the rules of cashing in this contract were changed. It's no longer money in the bank rules. You now need to give at least a week's notice before you can cash in and get your world championship opportunity. Evidently, what he has done is he has cashed in his contract that he has been carrying around for months to be added to the triple threat match at World's End, thus making the triple threat match a fatal four-way match. It is now a four-way for the AEW World Championship. And MJF tells Shivani to shut up. He called him a tub of goo. He said people are probably wondering why he would cash in his contract against three other people instead of one. Yeah, that's the first question on everybody's mind, I'm sure, after he made this announcement. He said Hangman once called him a coward. Maybe he was right. The old him would have taken every shortcut to get what he wants, but he needs to hurt Hangman, and what better way to do it than by taking the title back by beating him and two of his biggest rivals in one fell swoop. That way, he and his fans have zero excuses. So Joe started talking. MJF snapped at him to shut his mouth. He said he still hates him. When Joe took the title away from him, these people, all these fans here, they turned on him. They turned on MJF. And as much as he hates to admit it, the fans get to dictate who goes down as an all-time great. And it's not just that he wants to be an all-time great. He needs to be an all-time great. Joe's luck has run out. He's about to make Joe fall back harder than his hairline. World's End, the same place Joe ended his title reign. I end yours. Swerve piped up. Said that if there's anyone MJF needs to be afraid of in this ring, it's him. MJF said, Shane reminds him of this famous musician. They both call themselves moguls. They both rock way too much baby oil. And they're both dog shit rappers. Says, the name's on the tip of his tongue, P. Diddy. Yes, we got a P. Diddy joke here. He said, pop quiz class, whose house? Let's talk about that. These people know him as Swerve, but when they were 18 years old grinding it out on the indies, he knew him as Shane. And they both went their own way, and MJF went on to become the hottest young star in AEW, while Shane went to WWE. And I mean, those initials are just sacrilegious. You can't say that on an AEW show. So, of course, all the fans begin to boo. And MJF says, no, it's a perfectly good company. As for Swerve's run there, he goes, it wasn't so great. It wasn't so great. Though he thoroughly enjoyed watching him twerk for top dollar. But then he came knocking in AEW, and he got freaking jacked, and he became a tag team champion, which just reminds me, I hope Keith Lee is doing well. You don't hear about him anymore. When was the last time we had any sort of update on Keith Lee? They were a very good team, actually. Swerve and Our Glory was a very good team. But he said that Swerve was a tag team champion. He beat Sloppy Joe over there for the world title, and he held it for a whopping 126 days. He goes, not bad, folks. Although he had it for 406, but who's counting? But see, Shane, now we have a problem because you're in my way. You're Swerve stomping around like you own the damn place. You've been a very sloppy tenant. So no, this isn't your house, this is my house. The rent has come due, and the devil is here to collect. Says that you can call him Michael Corleone because he's about to handle all his family business. December 27th, Chicago, Illinois, World's End. He gets back what's rightfully his Triple B, his AEW World Championship. And do all you folks happen to know why? Because his name is Maxwell Jacob Friedman. And I'm better than you. And he allowed the fans to finish off that statement. He dropped the mic and he left the ring. Thank God he is back. He is back, yes. He has been missed. this was a long segment, but it was a great segment. It was a great return for MJF, who dropped the bomb on the World's End main event. Again, this main event now goes from being a three-way to being a four-way. And right away, the thing I liked the most is that they took the time, as soon as he announced this, you know, that he was cashing his contract, to address the obvious elephant in the room, which is why the fuck would he do this? You know, he earned that contract. He still has time to cash in that contract. And so why would you want to cash it in against three other men instead of just one? Why make it a harder mountain to climb? And so he addressed that right off the bat. And he said, look, you know, I've been called a coward. I've been called this and that. And I cheat and I take shortcuts. And so what better way to get back at everybody in this ring and get back at Hangman? If I throw myself into this match and potentially take your opportunity away from you to become the world champion and prove to you that I don't need to take these shortcuts, right? I take them because I want to. I take them because I'm an asshole. But doesn't mean that I need to. So I'm going to call your bluff and I'm going to cash in my contract and I'm going to make sure that you don't become the AEW world champion and I get my belt back. Now, you can still look at that and go, man, you know, just logically, though, it's still dumb. But you know what? He addressed it. He addressed it. I'm glad that they took the time to try to explain why MJF, who in the past has taken the coward's way out, would all of a sudden, you know, show some integrity and say, you know what? I'm confident that I could win this championship, even though my chances go way down in a four-way as compared to a singles match. At least they addressed it. So that was the thing that I liked there right at the top of his promo. The other thing is, this means he, and this is what I was thinking before we got to the end of the show. Like, I'm watching this and I'm going, this is great. Because it means he's going after the gold and not the stupid ring. He has held the Dynamite Diamond Ring every single year that this company has been in existence, from almost day one. It has become less so some sort of trophy that anybody can win, even though it technically is, but it really has become a part of his character. It's become a part of his gimmick. It's become a part of him. It's not the AEW Diamond Ring. It's the MJF Diamond Ring. That's basically what it's become until now. He's got bigger fish to fry. He's got bigger things to chase after instead of a fucking ring, which it, that doesn't have magical powers, okay? He's exhausted all of its magical powers. He doesn't need it anymore. Let somebody else win it. Maybe they can incorporate it into their own gimmick the way that he has over the last 6 years. So this all but guaranteed, unless he snuck in as a last-minute surprise, that we were finally going to get a new holder of the Diamond Ring, which is for the better. But I look at who's in this main event now at World's End, and, I mean, you look at this collection of talent in that match, and the collection of talent in this match is pretty sick. And what I love is that they all have history of some kind with each other. We know the history with MJF and Joe. We know that Joe and Hangman, they've already had a couple of matches. We know that Swerve won his first world championship from Samoa Joe at Dynasty. We know that Hangman and Swerve have had, if not the, one of the greatest feuds in AEW history. A feud that actually elevated both men. More so Swerve, because what that first, even the first match they had, let alone all the craziness that came later on in the cage and everything. That was really the match and the program, the feud, that elevated Swerve to a level in this company that he was not at before, where people looked at him and go, you know what, this is a main event player. Even if you thought that he had the ability and the talent to one day get there, sometimes all it takes is working with that one guy. It's like what Bret Hart did for Steve Austin in WWE. It's like the perfect analogy. Austin was very talented. Everybody knew he was very talented. And there were probably people who looked at him and said, you know what, this could be a main event player one day. But you know what, he's not quite there yet. And then he started calling out Bret Hart. And Bret Hart came back and they worked together and he beat him. But you know what, between that and the WrestleMania match, that took Austin to a level that maybe he would have gotten there. We'll never know, but it would have taken a hell of a lot longer. That feud, even though he lost all those matches, that feud elevated him. Working with Hangman elevated Swerve to world champion status. And the matches they had were great. Gory, a little too gory sometimes. Gory, violent, brutal, bloody, all those things. So there's a lot of history there. Now, MJF and Swerve, they have never wrestled in AEW before. But they have already teased at least a couple of times before. They've had some run-ins. They've had some interactions on TV. So we haven't gotten the match yet, but we've gotten the teases for it. And so now we're going to get the chance to see them in the ring together. It's not going to be a singles match, but we get to see them, share a pay-per-view main event where you know they're all going to go absolutely out of their minds and I'm sure do all kinds of crazy shit. But I'm very much looking forward to this match. And again, I like that there's a lot of ties that bind all four of these men together. Realistically, the title either stays with Samoa Joe or it goes to MJF. I don't see Hangman winning the belt back in this match. I don't see Swerve winning the belt back in this match. That is something you should take your time with. And really, if you're going to do it, build to it in 2026. We still don't know when Will Ospreay is going to be back. Surely he should be in that mix. Be great if he was back in time for that Wembley show. That may be, pushing it. But when they get him back in the mix, he'll certainly be in the world title picture as well. But yeah, I mean, this main event, I was already looking forward to it, but more so now, I'm very much looking forward to that match. And getting MJF back at this time when Darby Allin is out, we don't know for how long. Will Ospreay is out, we don't know for how long. Bobby Lashley is out, we don't know for how long, but evidently it's going to be for a while. I still don't know what the exact injury is. MVP was the one who announced that Lashley was hurt last week. That's why Shelton Benjamin was in the Battle Royal tonight and not Bobby Lashley. And then Fightful was reporting that apparently whatever the injury is, it's expected to keep him out for an extended period of time. Which basically means the Hurt Syndicate is dead. The Hurt Syndicate is on the back burner for the foreseeable future. Without Bobby Lashley, there is no Hurt Syndicate. And the Hurt Syndicate was one of the most popular acts in the entire company. So they're missing a lot of people. Getting MJF back is a very big deal for them. I'm glad he's back. We had a giant 8-woman tag team match with the new women's tag team champions, the Babes of Wrath, Willow Nightingale and Harley Cameron, teaming up with Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa, the women they beat in the finals of that tournament, to take on the TBS champion Mercedes Moné, Athena, Megan Bain, and Marina Shafir. They did not have a lot of time here. I don't even think this went 10 minutes. So there was a lot of craziness here, and just it was a sprint in a very short period of time. Marina was out there just in the course of the match, just dropping F-bombs like they were going out of style. Harley sent Megan to the outside, and Shafir came in with a tiger feint head scissors in the ropes. Storm flew in with a hip attack before Mina hit an assisted dive from the top onto the floor outside. Athena tagged Moné before wiping out the pile with a dive of her own, so Mercedes was legal. And Moné wanted a dive, but she ran right into a pounce by Willow, who followed up with a cannonball off the apron onto everybody outside. Meanwhile, back inside, Willow rolls into the ring, and she gets caught with an O-face off the top by Athena. She didn't see it coming. So the O-face takes her down. Mercedes is legal. And she very quickly scrambles over and she covers Willow Nightingale to get the pin to win for her team. Tag team champions have been defeated, but here's the bigger issue that I had with this finish. Athena has been Ring of Honor Women's World Champion for well over 1,000 days. Most of those matches, if not the championship itself, she won with that move. That's her finishing move. She has put down many women with that move. She drops Willow with the O-face, and Mercedes scrambles over and covers her and pins her. And as soon as she pins Willow, Willow pops up like nothing ever happened. What? You just got dropped with the woman's finish. She is the Ring of Honor forever champion. She's put countless women away with this move. You just took her finish and you bounce right back up as if you got rolled up with a small package? Because as soon as the finish, as soon as referee counted three, Willow popped right up and, chased Mercedes out of the ring. and then Mercedes and Athena were celebrating, and then off they went. But I'm like, I'm watching this going, why is she popping up and no-selling this woman's finish? It doesn't make any sense. So that was stupid. But they are setting up Mercedes and Willow, Mercedes and Athena. That was very clear coming out of this match for a shot at the Women's Tag Team Championships, probably at World's End. And then later in the show, on the collision portion of the night, we got confirmation that, in fact, Athena and Mercedes, because Athena threw the challenge out, and then Tony Khan made it official later on. We got the graphic and everything. At World's End, it will be Mercedes and Athena challenging Willow and Harley for the women's tag team titles. If you remember, Willow and Harley beat them in the semifinals of the tag team title tournament. So this is where Mercedes and Athena are going to be out for revenge. They're going to be out to avenge the loss in the tournament. And they should lose again. Because under no circumstances would I be taking these titles off of Willow and Harley right now. They just won them. They just won the titles. You just beat them in their first match coming out of that. For the purposes of setting up this match at the pay-per-view, fine. Now they need to go in there and beat some ass and win. Otherwise, it renders the entire tournament pointless if they go in there at World's End and just drop the belts to Mercedes and Athena. We sat through an entire tournament for no reason if all they do is go in there and change the belts. So they should absolutely go in there and retain. And I wouldn't even mind them trying again in 2026 and trying to set up something with Mercedes and Athena. I would have liked to have seen a more extended feud with them. Instead, we got the one match on Dynamite back in, April? And it was a great match. Might have been in Boston. And then we never saw it again. So I'd rather see them back on opposing sides rather than being any sort of long-term team. But that's how I would see things shaping up at World's End there. Now, in that same backstage interview later in the show, Mercedes said that she would also be defending her Rev Pro British Heavyweight Championship on Collision this Saturday. She's going to put her title on the line, one of the many, many championships that she still has. It's going to be an open challenge. And she should lose that as well, because that will just further the downfall that really began when she dropped the Ring of Honor TV title to Red Velvet at Final Battle a couple weeks ago. So I would expect the Rev Pro Championship to come off of her this weekend and for her to not win the tag team titles at World's End. Right? No more titles need to be added. We're in this phase now where the next championship that Mercedes wins later next year will be the AEW Women's World Championship. There should be no other titles added to her roster of championships until she wins the world title. From here on out, however long it takes, one by one by one, each title will fall off. I would save the TBS title for last, but that is how this will progress. There's no reason to add any more belts around her waist. I don't care if it's singles. I don't care if it's tag team. I don't care if it's a fucking gold medal or a trophy. She has all the accolades. She's all maxed out on accolades right now. Now you lose them one by one by one. By the way, that episode of Collision on Saturday, for those of you who care to watch, is airing earlier, 2:30 p.m. Eastern on TNT. So be aware of that. We had Kyle Fletcher against Pac. Gold League match in the Continental Classic. Given they were in England, Pac was treated like the hometown favorite here by the fans. The only time any one of the Death Riders will get a reaction like that is when they're in their hometown. So if it's John Moxley in, Cincinnati, Pac in the UK, Claudio, well, I guess they're not going to run any shows there. They're not running any shows where Claudio is from. And then you got Daniel Garcia and you've got Wheeler Yuta. And I mean, at that point, I want to say Garcia is a California guy, but I could be completely wrong about that. I could be. Although he did win the PWG title. I guess that doesn't mean he's from California, though. But we had Kyle Fletcher and Pack. We got a series of reversals to kick things off. Pack tried to keep Fletcher grounded in the early going. Fletcher escaped. Pack floated over into a snap hurricane rana, sent Fletcher outside to regroup. Pack quickly went out after him, only to get turned inside out by a lariat. Back in the ring, taking too long to go up top, Fletcher got caught when Pack jumped up to join him on the ropes, and he delivered an avalanche release belly-to-belly suplex, heading into a commercial break. You know, I'm looking at Pack these days, man. Like, he is just ripped to shreds, and, like, his shoulders and everything, like, I don't even know, because he's not, obviously he's not the biggest guy in the roster, height-wise, but, like, I see him out there now, and he is as, like, jacked as he has been his entire career, like, in WWE or anywhere else. It's just such a weird body type. Like, he's, I don't know. I don't know what the secret is. I don't know what he's been doing. I mean, I guess there was a period of time that went by there where he had a lot of time to just work out and get his body into a state that no one's ever seen it before. Good for him, but I don't know. It's crazy to see the transformation that he's undergone. So during the break, both men turned each other inside out with a double clothesline on the floor. Came back with Pack trying his home run lariat only to run into a Michinoku driver for two. Pack teased the Black Arrow. Fletcher, though, rolled outside. So instead, Pack readjusted and hit a huge moonsault out to the floor. Back inside, the Tiger Suplex landed, but Fletcher kicked out. And we had the ring announcer for the show, by the way, was Arkady Aura. So she made the trip overseas. She did the ring announcing for them. We got a time call here. We were 10 minutes in with 10 minutes left here in this match. Today's episode is sponsored by Factor. Man, I eat like a pig this time of year. I really do. It starts with Thanksgiving. I had two Thanksgiving parties to go to, and it just seems to continue on through Christmas, right? Cookies especially. Holiday cookies, that's my vice. Eating well during the holidays is a steep climb for me, but it's not impossible because I use Factor's chef-prepped, dietitian-approved meals to help me stay on course this time of year and not go beyond the main course into anything and everything that gets put in front of my face. Unlike meal kits that require prep and cooking, Factor delivers fully prepared, ready-to-eat meals in just 2 minutes. You also get to choose from a wider selection of weekly meal options, including premium seafood choices like salmon and shrimp, at no extra cost. Enjoy even more GLP-1 friendly meals and new Mediterranean options packed with protein and fats that are actually good for you, which is perfect this time of year with all the holiday temptations. For the first time, try Asian-inspired meals with bold flavors influenced by China, Thailand, and more. Think Korean beef bowls or Thai-style coconut curry, which is a nice break from the usual holiday options. 97% of customers say Factor helped them live a healthier life. Those are real people saying this, real people with real results. Now, I've tried Factor a bunch of times by now. I've yet to be let down by their offerings. The food tastes great, it's good for me, and it's the most convenient, healthy option for my money when I don't have a lot of time to be cooking for myself, nor am I very good at it. Looking at their menu for Christmas week coming up, you've got lots of great choices like the roasted garlic chicken or grilled pork chop and butternut mash if you're looking for calorie-smart options, red wine mushroom and chicken fusilli if you want something more carb-conscious, or the sun-dried tomato chicken if you're looking for something that's keto-friendly. Let Factor do the cooking for you. You do the eating with this special holiday offer for Solomonster listeners. Eat smart at factormeals.com/solomonster50off and use code solomonster50off to get 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for 1 year. That's code solomonster50off at factormeals.com for 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for 1 year. This exclusive holiday offer won't last. Lock in your savings before the new year rush. Offer only valid for new Factor customers with code and qualifying auto-renewing subscription purchase. Pack again went for a Black Arrow. Fletcher rolled to the opposite side of the ring. And Pack avoided a second Michinoku driver. He spiked Fletcher with a poison rana. Pack again tried his big lariat, but he ran into a leg lariat in the corner. Or not in the corner, but he was basically doing the Braun Breaker thing where he's hitting the ropes back and forth, building up speed. And when he hit the ropes and he went to go come off, he got met with a leg lariat by Fletcher, who then gave him a Liger Bomb, only for a two count. Pack avoided the Brain Buster. He attempted a flying crossbody, but he got caught. Pack, though, floated over, and he applied a Brutalizer, and then he got Fletcher down. He flattened him on the mat, and he put on a proper Brutalizer. And Fletcher was fading. It looked like he was going nighty-night, but he managed to get his foot on the bottom rope. Third time was a charm, though, for a very frustrated Pack, who finally hit the home run lariat for a close two count. Pack quickly went up top for the Black Arrow. Fletcher exploded up, crotched him on the ropes, and Pack took this just horrendous crash and burn fall, where he bounced off the buckle and the ropes on the way down and landed on the mat. Once he staggered back up to his feet, though, in the corner, Fletcher caught him with a Haluva kick. Fletcher spiked Pack with the Brain Buster. Pack kicked out, and the crowd cheered. Yeah, like he's this just big returning conquering babyface here. Fletcher wanted his buckle Brain Buster. Pack, though, fought out into an Avalanche Poison Rana, and he followed that finally with the Black Arrow to get the win. That Black Arrow was clean, and it got a huge reaction too. I've always said it's a great looking finish. It's probably the most beautiful looking finisher in all of wrestling. And I was saying that back when he was still Neville, you know, wrestling. Remember when he wrestled Seth Rollins on Raw that time for the WWE Championship? He's been using that move for over a decade now. And just, he hit this one clean. Great finish. Great match. It's been a reoccurring theme here with, in particular, Kyle Fletcher in this tournament. He goes out there. He's had a bunch of great matches. So now we've got a four-way tie. Atop the Gold Lee, we have Okada, Fletcher, Speedball, and Pack. They are all tied with 6 points each. After this, it was time for the Dynamite Diamond Battle Royal. Just shy of the 10 p.m. hour, the last two men remaining will meet one-on-one next Wednesday on Dynamite. Not only for the Diamond Ring, but for the right to then go on to challenge for the AEW World Championship January 14th, that's the Maximum Carnage episode of Dynamite. Imagine going through the entire month and just all of this, the relentless matches in this round robin Continental Classic. And all it's, again, it's their version of the G1. And you go through this entire tournament, all for the right to win the Continental Championship. But you win a battle royal on this show. You win a battle royal on this show, you still got one more match after that. So you win the battle royal, you win a singles match, but then you get a shot at the AEW world title. There's just something very ass backwards about this. It's a little too easy to get a world championship match as compared to everything these men are putting themselves through in this tournament. Something just feels off about this. But nonetheless, here in this battle royal, no MJF. So we knew that we were finally going to have a new owner of this diamond ring. So the participants were Shelton Benjamin. Again, no Bobby Lashley because he's hurt. Luchasaurus, Ricochet, the Gates of Agony, Brody King, Bandido, Josh Alexander, Mark Davis, Anthony Bowens, Max Caster, and Ace Austin. When the hell was the last time we saw Ace Austin on AEW Dynamite? I think the answer is never. I mean, it's just, it's true. You know, I mean, he's talented, but he doesn't get featured on this show. But he's in a battle royal where he could be in line for a world championship match. Yes. Mark Davis. Ace Austin. Toa Leona. Unbelievable. Wrestlers were already surrounding the ringside area. They made their entrance as some were making their entrance. The Demand actually attacked Brodito in the aisle as they were on their way down to the ring. So they finally decided to ring the bell. There were only six guys in the ring. Well, let's ring the bell. I think we're ready to kick things off here. Okay. So the bell sounds. Benjamin and Luchasaurus, they slugged it out. We had the former members of the Acclaimed. We had Caster. We had Bowens. Reluctantly, in agreement here, they were going to do their old scissor me timber spot, which they did. And then they each went to a corner and they were teasing, scissoring each other. But as they started to come in, Ricochet grabbed Max Caster and dumped him out over the top rope. Ace Austin got launched over the top by Mark Davis, who also eliminated Anthony Bowens before they went to commercial. Ricochet springboarded into the clutches of Shelton Benjamin, who launched him into a Luchasaurus chokeslam. Benjamin got tossed out by Alexander. Davis got dumped by Luchasaurus, who was then eliminated by Alexander. King fought off all of the Demand members, and he gave Ricochet a running Death Valley driver into the corner onto Toa Leona. Josh Alexander, he picked King's leg with an ankle lock. Brody rolled through into a Bandido monkey flip, eliminating Alexander. So Brody was stalking Ricochet out on the outside, and he squashed him up against the barricade. Toa Leona, meanwhile, launched Brody into the front row. Bandido escaped a fireman's carry by Bishop Khan, but he did not see Toa Leona sneak up from behind. He was about to eliminate him. When Brody King returned, he took the bullet for his partner, and he eliminated himself and Toa Leona. So the two of them were gone. And then Bandido hit a Hurricane Rana sending Bishop over the top rope to the floor. And that left Bandido and Ricochet. Now, Ricochet, I think, was kind of hanging out outside. And then as soon as it came down to Bandido only, that's when Ricochet slid back into the ring. And they ringed the bell. And everybody in the crowd looks and sounds very confused. But at that point, the Battle Royal is over. And they make the announcement that next week on Dynamite, it will be Ricochet one-on-one with Bandido. Two men who already have championships are going to wrestle for the diamond ring and a shot at potentially another championship. And that match will happen on Dynamite next week. I thought this Battle Royal, for the most part, was very lame. You know, sometimes they'll do a Battle Royal like this because it was a television Battle Royal. And sometimes they'll do a Battle Royal like this and it hits. It's like, man, you know what? This was fun. This was not one of those times. And the crowd was clearly caught off guard. I don't know if in the introductions for the Battle Royal, they made it clear to the people in the arena what the rules were. But even if they did, people were stunned when the bell rang. They're like, wait, what the fuck? What? We still got two guys left here. Not realizing that, yeah, you don't get to see that match because that's happening next week back in the States. And yeah, that was, especially for the live crowd, ended up being a very lame finish. But I will say this, you know, Ricochet against Bandido is a very good match. They're going to do that match. They're taping this weekend for Christmas week. So they're taping this weekend here in New York at the Hammerstein Ballroom. I think they're doing Saturday and Sunday tapings. So that's where they're going to be doing the match. Again, on paper, it sounds like a hell of a match. And honestly, the diamond ring is perfect for Ricochet. I'm sure Ricochet is going to win the ring. Which means, by the way, that if Ricochet, if I'm right, and Ricochet is going to win the diamond ring, it actually would make more sense for him to be defending the title against the babyface, if you think about it. I mean, you could do Samoa Joe against Ricochet. You could do MJF against Ricochet. I just think it would make more sense to do Ricochet and Hangman, Ricochet and Swerve. Obviously, the two of them have history together going back to earlier this year. I just, as I sit here right now, I just don't see Hangman or Swerve, you know, walking out with that championship. But I do think that Ricochet winning the title or ring, whatever you want to call it, makes the most sense. And then he could take that ring. Honestly, like him walking around with this gaudy ring on his finger and occasionally using it as a weapon to win matches, like it just suits him. It suits that character. The hell does Bandido need the ring for? Like the ring is not even really a babyface gimmick. It's meant for a heel. I can't imagine giving it to Bandido unless they just want to do away with it. He'd probably win it and then we would never see it again. You know what? Now that I say that out loud, maybe that is the better idea. Let's just get rid of the ring altogether. If MJF is not going to have it, then there's probably no point in anybody walking around with it. So this is where the collision part of the show kicked off. You know, it's very annoying. I watch the show each week on HBO Max. I just think overall, it's just for me a better viewing experience. But when the show ends, it's the dumbest thing because the show ends on these 3-hour nights. And technically now it's Collision. So the stream just ends. And there's a screen. It just stays on that screen. Thank you for watching. So you got to close out of that and then go find Collision, which usually is a little further down on the menu, and just open Collision. And then it just picks up and it just goes from there. It's like Raw and Warzone back in the day, like two separate shows, except it's, you know, for tonight, for the purposes of tonight, really, it's not. But in the official listings, I guess it is. So John Moxley is backstage. I don't think I missed too much of this promo. I missed a little bit of this promo in the switch over to Collision. But he's in the back and he says he likes the Continental Classic because it's very simple. You step into the ring, you bring whatever you got, and everything is laid bare. There's nowhere to hide. The deeper the tournament gets, the more that gets revealed. Moxley pushes people's buttons. He antagonizes them, which changes people because some people react differently than others. Some become monsters like Kyle O'Reilly, while Roderick Strong is better than he's ever been. Really? Really? Roderick Strong, who I believe has 0 points in this tournament. He's better than he's ever been. Okay. So he said that he left Moxley 30 seconds away from being shit out of luck in this tournament in their match tonight. Whatever happens, Moxley wants to know that he didn't leave any bullets in the chamber and he left it all out there. This was a fine babyface promo here from heel John Moxley. They need to be booting him out of there soon if he's going to be going out there cutting promos like this. You could be cutting promos like that. He should not be very long for the Death Riders. We had Orange Cassidy against Máscara Dorada in a Blue League match in the Continental Classic. Both men came in with just 3 points each. The match was okay. I mean, it was not as enjoyable as the earlier ones. Cassidy, or Dorada rather, was on the apron when Cassidy went for an orange punch. Dorada avoided it and then wrenched Cassidy's arm over the top rope. And then a few seconds later, Dorada went for a top rope jump into an arm drag. But Cassidy hooked him into a flash pin and he got the win. So he gets the 3 points. Jamie Hayter got a win over Isla Dawn with the Haterade. Since Jamie is the one getting a championship match against Chris Statlander at the pay-per-view next weekend. After the match, Isla and Jamie, they were showing respect to one another, but here comes the Triangle of Madness. And they attack both women. They knock Isla out of the ring as Julia Hart uses her belt to begin whipping Hayter. Here comes Statlander to make the save. And in all of the confusion that was going on in the ring, Hayter accidentally lays out the women's world champion with Haterade. And she was all like, whoops. She's like fucking Steve Urkel out there. Yeah, she didn't really care that she put this woman down. And then she picked up the title and she stared at Chris from across the ring. Someone who needs to be involved in the women's world title picture coming out of World's End is Tekla. And it really doesn't matter whether Statlander retains, Hayter wins. Tekla, I think, should be next in line to be challenging for that championship. And then they close the show at the very end with FTR retaining their AEW tag team titles over Juice Robinson and Austin Gunn. Late in the match, FTR, they were lining up for a shatter machine. Austin pulled Wheeler out of the ring and he posted him. So Dax went to go for the shatter machine, but didn't realize that Cash wasn't there. Harwood got pinned, but Wheeler got his partner's foot on the rope, which the referee saw, but the Bang Bang Gang did not. They think they won the match. They think they won the titles. The match continues, though. FTR got chop blocks, top rope stomp from Wheeler to the leg of Robinson, and Cash Wheeler with the submission got Robinson to tap out. Are you like that? Da-da, da-da. Come on, man. You mean, how many of you grew up on Urkel? Peace in the Middle East, reign in Spain. I mean, there's so many great quotes from back in the day. Got any cheese? Well, that will not be one of my quotes. But yes, that was one of his. So FTR retains the tag team titles. as if there was ever any doubt. And I could not click off fast enough because it's like, fuck, it's 11:03. The show is still going on. I got a stream to do. Click. Let's wind this down. So look, you got some good wrestling on the show. You get good wrestling in this tournament every week. I still have not seen a match that I think has matched the level of or the intensity of the Kyle Fletcher Speedball Mike Bailey match. To me, that's still a number one in this tournament. But outside of that, it was really all about MJF coming back. There was really nothing else on this show that really stands out all that much. Especially in the Collision Hour, there was virtually nothing that stands out to me. But it was all about the return of MJF. It's good to have him back. It's good that he will be back in that World's End main event. I'm looking forward to that. Again, maybe they'll surprise me and they'll put it on one of the baby faces in that match. I don't see it going that way. I just feel like with Swerve especially, they may want to extend that chase out a little bit longer. Like, if you were to say to me, like, okay, we're going to put it on one of the baby faces, then I would say put it back on Hangman. Put it back on Hangman, and I like the idea then of building to Hangman defending the championship against Swerve next year. I would not put the belt on Swerve right now. I think it's premature. He just came back. You got to build to it. You know, he's going to be one of those top baby faces for them. Him and Hangman. Kenny is being phased out. Kenny clearly is hurting, and either he and or Tony Khan do not have faith in him to go out there on all of these pay-per-views and just have these killer singles matches against all these guys. So Kenny is always going to be a top guy in this company. He's a legend, but he's not going to be in that top mix when it comes to the world title. And Ospreay is still many months away from coming back. Swerve is going to be that guy. So build to it. You know, don't just throw the championship on him, month after he comes back. We'll see how they go with it. This is the Twitter poll. What did you think of the Holiday Bash edition of AEW Dynamite? 58.5% thumbs up. 41.5% thumbs down. At Solomonster. That is where you can vote in these polls. You guys already knew that. Elder Murray. What were the original plans for for Bray Wyatt, Uncle Howdy, and Alexa Bliss as a faction? Was it meant for Uncle Howdy to bring them all together? We're never going to know. Nobody knows. Nobody knows except Bray and Bo, and I don't even know if Alexa would have been clued in as to all that stuff. So, unfortunately, we'll never know for sure. I would imagine we would have been headed... I would think we were going to be headed towards Bray against Howdy, eventually. Buy or sell, Brett versus Diesel or Brett versus Sean? As what, a match, a feud? As a feud, Brett versus Sean. That's a no-brainer. If we're talking matches, I mean, there were so many different ones. Brett and Diesel alone had three different ones on pay-per-view. Brett and Sean had a whole bunch on pay-per-view. Brett and Sean had the better matches. So I guess that answers your question. Cena versus Edge or Cena versus Punk? Cena versus Punk. What is your favorite Raw moment during Christmas? Stone Cold stunning Santa Claus. Do you think Savage should have won the Royal Rumble in 1993? If it got us Bret against Savage at WrestleMania, then yes. That was the first year that winning the Royal Rumble punched your ticket to the main event of WrestleMania. Instead, not only did he lose, but he looked like a dumb shit because he tried to pin Yokozuna. Which, I mean, a veteran like Randy Savage, who's been in multiple Royal Rumbles before, being eliminated because he tried to pin someone is pretty fucking stupid. Lord Toron, do you see Stephanie McMahon headlining the Hall of Fame? I wouldn't put it past Triple H to have his wife headline. God, I hope not. She's not going to headline the Hall of Fame. I don't know if it's going to be Cena. It should be Cena. It really depends on his availability in Vegas next year. It should be John Cena. But Stephanie is the headliner would be incredibly stupid. Dry chicken and ribs. Let me tell you how Gunther can get more heat on himself. He goes to a mall, talks to Santa, chops Saint Nick, and makes kids cry. Yeah, Gunther has to make all the little kids cry now. Little snot bubbles coming out of their ears or their nose. If he can make snot bubbles come out of their ears, that would be very impressive. That would be very impressive. Drew McIntyre got a lot of bad ideas coming for Cody Rhodes. Sends a snake to the Rhodes house as a Christmas present. Let's not steal past storyline ideas, okay? We can be a little more creative than that. Emperor Comet, we want Vince Chance at WWE, and now I'm hearing Diddy Chance on AEW. Yeah, I did hear that. I did hear the dipshits in the crowd tonight chanting for Diddy. Wink the Cosmic Grandma, that Battle Royal was a total nothing burger. At least the right two won it. Glad to see MJF back in the title picture. Yeah, the Battle Royal was garbage, but we're going to get a good match out of it at least, so Ricochet and Bandito will be good. Tuxedo T-Servo, MJF referring to WWE as a perfectly good company actually got me to laugh out loud. So glad he's back. Arabian Knight says, MJF always mentioning WWE is still lame. I know he wants to end up there probably in 2027, but still, it adds nothing to the promo, in my opinion. Glad he is back, though. Well, I mean, at least they've scaled back on the WWE mentions on television. It felt like there was a period of time where we were getting a mention every couple of weeks. Whether it was MJF, whether it was Jericho, whether it was somebody else. Dead Kirby 22. Should NXT start to market the brand as a large budget indie? Think Ring of Honor. And maybe bring a couple of overseas guys in. I think the roster has potential. I mean, they tried that already. That was the whole black and gold era. They basically raided Ring of Honor, stripped it of all of the key guys that were over there. Zayn, Rollins, Owens, so on and so forth, right? Cesaro, Hero, Jimmy Jacobs. That was the black and gold era, baby. I think they have their system now, and there's no reason for them to deviate from it. They got a lot of talent there in the pipeline. Anytime they want, they could go out and bring in a hot free agent from the indie scene overseas, or really from anywhere in this country, internationally, and just integrate them into the current system that they have down in Orlando. The one Ray Passmore. I wish people in AEW did not take extended absences. I could say the same thing about WWE. Believe me, it's a problem in both companies. It's very annoying. Not that I'm against people, you know, getting time off, but it just feels like, I don't know, you know, whether you have certain talents that have a movie role to go film. And it's like, all right, go do your thing. And then certain stories maybe end up in a state of flux, or you have multiple people who go out at the same time. And if we were given a product, and I'm thinking a lot about WWE in this case, like especially on Friday nights, we were given a show that was still exciting and interesting week to week. It's like, all right, cool. See you when you get back. But then the shows end up being so fucking boring. And you're like, man, all these people are out. They're taking time off, or they're filming this, or, you know, whatever it might be. It's not an injury. They're just not around. Or they're just part-time players. That's where it hurts. It's like, we could really use these people on TV right now. And instead, this guy's sitting out, this guy's sitting at home, this guy's doing this, this guy's doing that. You know, if the product overall was more exciting and more fun, I don't think people would mind as much. But it's very noticeable when the product is not, and you have all these people that are on the roster who are just not available. If they're hurt, that's one thing. But if they're not, it's like, what are we doing here? How many returns in 1 year can Roman Reigns have? Randy Orton is in Saudi Arabia riding roller coasters. I mean, good for him, but... All right. We got DG. What do you consider to be John Cena's prime years? I acknowledge it's different for pro wrestling than any other sport, but I myself landed on 2005 to 2013. His prime years in the ring were 2015 and 2016. When I hear prime years, that's how I take it. You're talking prime years in ring in terms of his body of work and his match catalog? 2015 and 2016, to me, is John Cena at his peak in terms of the output that he was turning out. Kevin Owens, AJ Styles, Seth Rollins, the U.S. Title Open Challenge. It's a lot of really good stuff that came out of that period from John Cena. Jeremy Rose, most disappointing wrestling reveal, Black Scorpion as Flair or Vince as the higher power? How about Austin Theory is the masked man on Monday night? Can we throw him in there as an honorable mention? What do you think about the NXT title change botch last night? Yeah, I'll talk more about that on Sunday. Shit happens. It's not the first time it's happened. It's actually happened at least three or four times in WWE history alone. You got to roll with the punches, man. Shit happens. When you have the referees count things as a shoot, this is what's going to happen. If it screws up your plans, too bad. Come up with new plans. That's life. You know what? Maybe it's a blessing in disguise. Now, Blake Monroe doesn't have a mid-card championship in NXT. You know what? You can call her up to SmackDown. Boy, SmackDown could sure use her. The only issue there is that there's a lot of similarities between her and Tiffany Stratton. Do you want Blake Monroe and Tiffany Stratton on the same show? I would almost want them on different shows. So maybe move Stephanie to Raw. I'm sorry, not Stephanie. Move Tiffany to Raw and put Blake on SmackDown. That's what I would do. Matt Fisher, can you sing Cena's theme again? That was amazing. Was it, though? Was it amazing? It's Abudo. That's about it. That's about as far as I can get right now. You don't want to hear me sing Cena's song beyond that. Abudo. I always thought it was apple juice. I mean, that's just... In my head, it was apple juice. It's like Sheamus, man. Too many limes. Too many limes. And why are ducks such bad customers? They never pay their bill. Look at Matt Fisher. Matt Fisher is going all Sidro on us tonight. He's going all Duff's Vids on us tonight. Apple dough? Oh, apple dough. Yeah. I say apple juice, but I guess apple dough works. I still think the best thing ever was many years ago. We went through this period where people were taking photos of their closed captions during Monday Night Raw. Whenever Randy Orton would come out, it was like the early 2010s. And when his theme music would play, the closed captions, like each week it was something different. So, you know, when his song starts, it's, I hear voices in my head, they counsel me, they understand. But like the closed captions would have it as like, you know, I hear voices, or not even voices in my head, it's like, I have oysters in my bed, and I... There was one where it was like, I have boys in my shed. And I'm like, boy, this is getting really dark here. There was another one. I ate poison. Now I'm dead. I was more entertained by the closed captions for Randy Orton than I was Monday Night Raw during that period. Emoji Matt 87. Thank you for the $4.99. What did the drummer name his twin daughters? Anna 1, Anna 2. I got that joke from Sidra not that long ago. A few months ago. It's a good one. It's a good one, but not one that I haven't heard before. All right, thank you guys for hanging out with me here. A little holiday bash action as the snow falls here on us on a Wednesday night. Fell short of the goal. It's the way it goes on some Wednesdays. It's how it is with Dynamite, but try again next time. Unfortunately, that means no Be the Booker until next Monday. You're going to have to wait all the way to next Monday. And we'll try again then. But it has been a very good couple of weeks here on the channel. It's been a very strong December so far. You guys have been rocking it, especially with Saturday night's main event. You guys got that review up over 50,000 views. And we have more content yet to come. Some people were asking me about it. You know, New Year's Eve this year falls on a Wednesday. So I will be doing my annual Make It Till Midnight New Year's Eve stream. So I hope you will make plans to join me. We always have fun and hang out and interact. It's usually a big night here on the channel, but what we'll do is we'll incorporate a Dynamite review into it as well, and we'll just kind of go in and out of that. We'll be very loosey-goosey with it. But yeah, there will be a Dynamite review as part of that, but I will still be live for New Year's Eve on the 31st. So that is the current working plan at this point. At this point, it's been like a five-year tradition. I think this might be the fifth year in a row. Fourth or fifth? Has to be fifth. First one I did was 2020. I remember that because the whole theme of it was to hell with 2020. I think that was the first one that we did. So it's coming up. It's coming up. New Year's Eve is coming up. Make your plans. Warhawk Rambo. So you feel the current WWE product is too homogenized and prioritized towards advertisers. AEW, in my opinion, is more fun. Hey, you know, look, different strokes for different folks. Some people are going to find AEW more fun for lots of different reasons. You know, they may find it more fun because, like you said, it's you don't have ads plastered all over the mats and all over the place in the same way WWE does, or the wrestling is better, or whatever. Everyone has different, priorities and what they look for. The WWE product, it is very homogenized is probably a good word for it. Very much so. It's a very, very corporate product. And that doesn't mean you still can't enjoy the product, but it will never be what it once was. Because it's a totally different product now. It's just such a bigger company than it was back then. And it can never go back to that. So you just sort of enjoy it in a different way. But it's jarring when you go back and watch the WWE product. And I'm not even talking necessarily 30 years ago. I mean, you can go back 10 years. You know, 15 years. 12 years. 8 years. And some of the differences are very jarring. And 619. Thank you for the $1.99. RSPW Rewind is coming. It's coming. Hoping actually to knock it out next week. I was going to try to time it, you know, because things sometimes get slow with the holidays. I'm like, that's kind of like the perfect time to do it. And this week is just very busy with House of Glory stuff. So it's coming. You guys unlocked it. I also wanted to try to work in some John Cena posts. So I kind of pulled some of the stuff I was going to use to try to work some Cena stuff into it, just because I felt like it was timely. So that'll be something to look forward to as well. I haven't done an RSPW Rewind in 3 years, if you can believe it. This will be the first one. There were probably some people who were like, what's that? What's that? There's a whole playlist of them here on the channel. What's that? It was a time and place in history. Anyway, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great rest of your evening, morning, I guess it's morning now, almost 1 o'clock in the morning, and go check out all the other content here on the channel, and I will see you back here real soon, and of course this weekend as well, episode 943 of The Sound Off. Until then, take care guys, happy holidays.